It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
Oh, wow. I think it might actually not be your voice. I think it might be my speakers.
Okay.
Because the recording in progress lady was real loud. Didn't occur to me. I've done this before. I've spent like 10 minutes with somebody trying to figure out why I couldn't hear them, and they were adjusting all their stuff, and then I figured out I hadn't picked my headphones, and so that was why it was on mute. So the point is, I always assume it's not my fault, and it's always my fault. So the other day I was having lunch with a listener. That's a tier on our Patreon. If you can find our Patreon and you can donate, you too could have lunch with me. Not William. He doesn't eat lunch. Anyway, I was having lunch with a listener, and I told them the thing because I thought they might be the only ones interested in it. But then I had so much fun telling the story that I decided I'm going to tell it anyway, even though I still think they might be the only ones interested. So it's story time.
Okay.
Way back in the day, by which I mean the mid-teens, 2015, 2016, around there, NBC came up with a brilliant idea. I say that unironically, and it may be the only brilliant idea that NBC has had in a very long time. They decided they were going to make a streaming service of their own that was specifically for comedy. And they called it CISO. And we had CISO, and we were very big fans of CISO, because in addition to having like all episodes of The Office and all episodes of 30 Rock and whatever else was popular on NBC at the time, comedy wise, they gave shows to a lot of like alt comics and things that wouldn't necessarily have them, including ones we were fans of. I think what pushed us there was they did Take My Wife, which was a show with Cameron Esposito and at the time named Rhea Butcher, who were married. And it was a fictionalized comedy about their relationship and them becoming married, essentially. And we really liked that. And then there was also a show on there called Thingmaker that was basically a parody show of creative incubator companies. And so every week there were different inventions, and they were all ridiculous, and there was way too much money involved and stuff. And it was pretty good too. But at the time, I seem to remember it at the time, but it meant nothing to me. They gave the McElroy brothers a show. My brother and me. But at the time, I didn't know who they were. I didn't pay any attention or anything like that. So eventually CISO dies. Surprisingly quick, actually. maybe lasted 2 years, maybe, I don't know. And obviously the things that were already popular on there just went other places that are popular, but all the original stuff just scattered to the winds. Like, they sold them off to whoever the hell wanted them. Some of them I'm pretty sure are still not available in places, but other ones are in weird little pockets, little niche streamers you've never heard of and stuff like that. And so I've become a fan of the McElroy brothers, and they occasionally mentioned their failed TV show, and I'm like, I want to see where this is. Where can I stream this? And I find that I can stream it on a service I've never heard of called VRV.
Okay.
And VRV appears to be mostly anime, but also just other little dinky shows, including a couple of different CISO ones that I recognized. Dan Harmon had a thing where somebody animated his D&D sessions, and that was a show, and so that's on there stuff. And there's only 6 half-hour episodes of the Macro Brothers show. And I was like, I don't want to buy a new thing for that. But you could do a trial of 1 week. And so I was like, one of these weeks, I'm going to sit down. I'm going to sign up. I mean, I did sign up with the cap, but I mean, I'm going to subscribe. And I'm going to binge them all in the week and then cancel. But I just kept never getting around to it. I'm like, oh, is this a good week? No, this isn't a good week. Oh, no, I want to. And I just kind of didn't bother. And then because I did make an account, I eventually got an email from VRV saying, just to remind everybody, in May, I forget what date, but sometime in May, we're disappearing forever because we're owned by Crunchyroll and we're just getting shoved into Crunchyroll. So make sure you go, which Crunchyroll is a very big anime streaming service. And I was like, okay. And so I go online and I look at like some Q&A stuff. And I mean, one of the frequently asked questions was like, what's happening to all the non-anime stuff? And they were like, yeah, it's just not going to be available. I was like, well, shit. So I decided to search my little Roku TV for things, because you can type in on my Roku, on Roku devices and on our Roku TV, you can type in like a movie or an actor or whatever, and it'll give you everything it's got for that, and it'll show you what services have them and if it's free or if it requires a subscription or if you have to buy it or what. And it turns out you can buy the entire season of My Brother and Me on Amazon Prime for $10. So I did. And like I said, 6 episodes, it's essentially the same as the podcast, but stretched out more. The whole point is they all went back to Huntington, West Virginia, which is their hometown, to film this. And each week they do one email and they do a whole bunch of stuff with it. So like the first one, I think, was I'm going to college soon and I met my new dorm room mate and she's going to bring a small collection of haunted items to the room. How can I tell her, like, fuck no? Like how do I do? So they got an empty dorm room in the local university that's there and they decorated everything. And then they went to the antique shop and talked to the local antique people about trying to find haunted items. And then they put them in the thing and then they got, like, so they just do a whole bunch of things in town. They seem to always have a bit with the mayor where they go wanting him to do something and he's unhappy about it every time. And by and large, these are just actual people in the town. And they're very short. I've only seen 4 of them out of the 6 because I'm trying to pace them out. I love it. I absolutely love it. They could have done 1,000 seasons of this and I would have watched it all. I also can see why it wasn't popular.
Why?
It's a podcast done as a TV show, and I think those are different. I like it for the exact same reason I like the podcast, and the podcast is successful, but I don't think it necessarily translates. Oh, like you, if I had started with the TV show, I don't know that I would like it as much. It is hard to explain, but it's a very podcast sensibility in a TV show, which makes it sort of rougher in a way. There's a lot of stuff that is clearly off the cuff. And in fact, a lot of times where they specifically mention, like, this is not a bit we're doing here. they had one involving spiders. And Travis, the middlest brother, is terrified of spiders. And Justin pulled a joke on him where he basically got him to close his eyes and think about spiders. And then he like reached behind him or whatever. And Travis literally hit him. And like they actually cut from it. And then and like a lot of the episode was them dealing with that tension. And at the end, he had to like apologize. And the other guy was like, yeah, sorry, it was not a good goof. But like, yeah, that came out of so there's just a lot of things like that. If I don't know, the reason I thought this listener would be the only one is I know she listens to the podcast, some at least, and liked it. I don't know that anybody else involved. I don't know that you've ever heard or anything. I just occasionally send you the animatics or whatever about cursing a real sword. I think if you like my brother and me, the podcast, you will like, I cannot imagine somebody liking one of these things and not the other. So if you're out there and you do like it, my brother and me, and are willing to spend $10 to see 6 episodes of a TV show, I highly recommend it.
Okay.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that started as a Spin Doctors cover band. And here we are. I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 634.
I have no idea. Is it?
Pretty sure.
We had a 633. How was it? Was it any good?
I didn't listen to it.
Me neither. If a podcast is recorded in the woods. All right. For those of you just joining us for the first time, here's how this works. We have a hat. It is magical in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And people write into that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with whatever the crap they want, questions, topics, diatribes, whatever. The hat magically forwards us the emails. And then we read them on the air and talk about them, and that's it. And people did respond. I pulled a Jeb Bush when posting the first of our last two-parters. I don't know if you remember one of the famous gaffes of Jeb Bush when he was running for president is he made a speech that was filmed, and at the end nobody applauded, and so he just said, "Please clap." And they all clapped. So when I posted the podcast to Facebook, I the little comment I put it, I said, "Please email." And they did. Y'all emailed, and we're very happy about that. So hopefully we will get some of those today. But we have important things to talk about because somebody went on a trip to learn to become a Jedi Knight or whatever it is you do. I don't pay a lot of attention. But you went to a city and did some things.
Yeah, I mean, I...
I love how you had to pause to make sure it was accurate to say that you went to a city and did some things.
I mean...
Which one of those were you not positive on?
Neither one. Technically, I was in St. Charles. I never really got into Chicago, technically.
And St. Charles is not a city?
I mean, I guess. And... And I didn't really do anything out. I mean, I don't. Yeah, I did leave the facility one time, but not to go anywhere. I didn't like leave the grounds. I went outside with some people who were doing some things, and then I went right back inside. I spent most of the time just inside this facility that was, you know, I didn't really see any sights or do anything fun. I didn't
say fun things, just things. Unless you were just asleep the whole time.
I mean, I think it counts. The stuff I did do was interesting. I would say it was fun, but it wasn't. I mean, when people think of you going to a city and doing things, they don't think of you just sitting in a classroom or doing homework at night or whatever it is you do.
Tell us in the blog or on the YouTube comments here what you think of when you think of someone going to a city and doing things. While William tells us how his trip was, and we can see if it's applicable. So how was it? I'm just saying it. I'm not putting any greater label on it, just to be safe.
No, it was very good. I mean, you remember the last time I thought it was.
I do. And you gushed about it for a half hour, which is why I'm giving you this platform right now, because I assume, again, you're just going to be super into it.
I mean, I would say that this time was even more extraordinary than the first time, but I have difficulty talking about it. Because, first of all, most of the things that happened involve, you know, specific people who I don't know if I feel comfortable just talking about. But also, I, you know, sometimes when something really awesome happens, you stop and think to yourself, did that really happen? Am I reading this right? Is this, you know, is this something that that is really as awesome as all that? Or, you know, is this just wishful thinking on my part or whatever? But I mean, it, you know, it's not, I'm pretty sure they happened, but it's hard for me to think of a way to talk about it that isn't like, just like what I have been right now is sort of halting. Like I have to stop and go, wait a minute, you know, what am I really saying? What am I really talking about here?
I love this, because I'm going to go ahead and assume this is just you skirting around the issue that you got laid. And since you're not going to tell us, you can't disprove that. So I win.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, I'm not smiling anymore. My tongue is stuck.
Oh.
Sorry. If it looks mocking.
I mean, I guess a way to summarize it is just, you know, when you go for a school-related thing, you know, you want things to go well. You want your interactions to go well. You want the people you meet to, you know, seem like they appreciate you being there. They like you, or they get something out of you being there. And vice versa. You want to get something out of being there, obviously. And, you know, it's just, I've done things like this my whole life. And some have been really horrible. Some of them have been pretty good. But I mean, I don't think it's typical for me for them to be, again, what I would call extraordinary. And so it's kind of a big deal. You know, I'm used to things being, you know, just, I really don't know how to put it into words.
Now, I feel like there are two aspects to a thing like this. There is the educational aspect and what you learned and the perspective you gained and the epiphanies you had in the moment doing exercises and discussions and things like that. And then there is the broader social thing of just getting to hang out with people and maybe meeting people and cool things when you're not doing actual schoolwork or whatever. To what is this sense of pleasant awe? Which side does it fall on, or did it, was it both?
It was all of it.
Nice.
I mean, part of it is getting a certain kind of feedback, a certain kind of positive feedback that I'm just not used, you know.
You don't get that enough from me?
I'm not used to getting that kind of feedback from people other than, like, you know, like Abby's very supportive, and she always has nice things to say, and I don't dismiss it that at all. I know some people, oh, you're biased or whatever. I don't. Abby's an honest person. She says that something's really good or going well, I trust her and I believe her.
Abby tells me good stuff, I do not believe her. I think she's just trying to spare my feelings.
But for the most part, you know, outside of Abby, you know, I'm not used to getting overwhelmingly positive feedback from people, and so it's I don't always know how to process it. So I guess that's part of it. That's part of it.
So on this occasion, you got some really positive feedback?
Yeah, I'd say so. I'd call it that, yeah. And yeah. And I'm glad. I mean, that's good, right? That's what... You go to do something and people
say, I don't know. Hey. It's never happened to me.
That's not true. You know, that's not true. You go somewhere and you try something and people are like, wow, that was, you know, great. And you stop and go, it was great? Really? I was going for that. Obviously, that's what I'm always going
for. That's what I was shooting for. Was great.
Yeah, but you know, good. That's if someone says it was good, that's pretty nice. Good. You know, better than what you usually get, which is either nothing or yeah, that was kind of crap. Okay, too bad. You know, but yeah, it's like oh, that's I, you know, I don't even know what to say to that. And I don't know how to, I don't know. I mean, it's been several days since I got back and I was a little worried that when we did this, you'd ask and I wouldn't know how to talk about it. And I still don't know how to talk about it. I'm still processing, what it really means. And maybe I won't have it figured out for a long time. I mean, part of it too is, this is just the first, you know, this is the fifth week of a 10-week quarter, right?
Yeah.
And so I had to get right back and start doing things. Actually, I was ill on Tuesday, so I couldn't do anything. But you know, and so I lost a day. So I really had to book it yesterday and I've been working today. So I haven't really had a lot of time just to sit and reflect on it either. So that's part of it. But I mean, overall, I'm sure it's a good thing. I'm not complaining about it. I'm a little surprised at my reaction, I guess, because I mean, you'd think if you go to do something and it goes, say better than you expected, I guess it went better than I expected. Maybe that's what I mean to say, that you would just sort of think, oh, great. And then you just go on with building off of that or whatever. But it's really thrown me off somehow. And I'm not even sure how or why. That's
that weird. Expected is the key word there. In general, if something doesn't go to expectations in any direction, unless it's one of those like, oh, it didn't go as I expected, but it makes sense now that it went the way it did, then you're like, that's fine. But outside of that, the brain needs to be like, oh, well, why was I expecting this? Why didn't it go that way? What does that mean? How, like, no, that makes sense.
Well, so, I mean, like I said, it's very good that it was, you know,
yeah,
overall, that's a great thing. Right. But I just, maybe part of me is like, well, there's probably a lot of things going on, but one thing might be, well, how do I not screw this up? It's like, oh, okay. I've reached this place and I'd like to stay there. How do I do that? How do I not like, you know, crash or something? I think that might be part of it. It's like, I don't know, but just part of it. There's lots of things. I mean, I could probably go all the whole thing talking about this little thing and this little thing. It's just a perfect storm of things that are sort of making my brain freeze up. But I mean, I'm sure it'll be fine. I just don't know how to talk about it, which this is a podcast. So that makes me feel stupid.
I mean, it's been 12 years. I don't know. At this point. Well, anything else? What, you were sick, but just for one day.
Well, so it, you know, I get migraines. And most of the time, if it's going to be really severe and cause a real problem, it's still only going to be like 24 hours, or 12 hours or whatever.
Yeah.
And this is one of those. Took all day. It was very bad. I had to cancel an appointment I had and everything was not good. But I felt better by yesterday and it was fine. We got a new Honda Killer. We can't do anything about it till the break. But
yeah.
But you remember I was saying we wanted to get one that was a level 5 and we also wanted to get one with some supernatural themes. So we were able to get one that's both of those. And so we'll be able to play that the break and I'll be able to tell you all about it.
You're going to open it up and it's literally just going to be a set of GPS coordinates because it's level 5. So it's much harder.
And we've been watching, you know, Ted Lasso and stuff. You're waiting for it to be done before you watch it?
No, yeah, but that's not really why I'm waiting. I'm going to rewatch the first two.
Oh.
And I'm very worried. I am not worried that the quality will not be as good. I am not worried about that. It would be really weird. And I'm assuming you're watching it. The quality is as good.
Me.
Yeah. I'm worried it's not going to hit the same for me because time has passed and things are changed. And a lot of times revisiting stuff that really mattered to me, it mattered in the moment and it, you know, had its impact on me and it changed me and I'm a different person now. And now that's not necessarily there, except sort of as a nostalgia thing. I don't think that will probably be the case, but I'm dragging my feet. And I think that's why. But I will be getting to it soon.
Yeah, I would say that it's every bit as good as it ever was. We enjoy watching it. So, but you know, different people, different tastes and whatever. But so yeah, I'm sorry that's a very disappointing report about how things went, but I'm interested to know how your last
it
2 weeks.
It went. Is disappointing. I was hoping it was gonna be awful.
I'm interested to know how your 2 weeks went because it's been 2 weeks, well, hasn't it?
Yes, but I've still got leftover stuff on my list from before.
Oh, yeah, your list. I forgot. You're making a list now.
Only a couple things, actually, though. Just two movies. One was on Shudder, was called Sissy. It's an Australian horror film that's maybe entirely a female cast. Definitely only female cast, like with names and stuff. It was good. I'm stumbling upon a lot of Australian horror really for some reason. I don't know. It's fine. I don't really want to talk about it. But we also watched Ghosted on Apple TV. You hear about this? You know about this? Have you seen this in the news here?
I've seen previews and stuff for it, yeah. I mean, I'm not particularly interested.
I have asked other people. And they look at me like I'm weird. But I am convinced that there is a subgenre of romantic comedy wherein a woman has a lovely time with a man and then later finds out he's a secret agent or a superhero or something. And she gets caught up in essentially action set pieces and stuff and espionage. I feel like there have been a lot of movies like this. Maybe I'm insane. This is a gender flipped one of those.
Right. Which doesn't make it more interesting.
No. although it had moments. It had moments that I liked. It had moments that sort of addressed the gender issue that I liked. Some. It had other ones that didn't so well, but and the big thing is it's Chris Evans and Ana de Armas are the two main. It's fine. Nobody needs to see it. I found it interesting because it's Apple TV's version of doing a Netflix. I've talked before about doing a Netflix, a Red Notice or any of the Bright, all, you know, we're just going to throw a shit ton of money at it and then not care. And everybody's there because they're being paid really well, not because they give a shit about what's happening. And it's that, but here's what it feels like to me. I don't know a lot about the making of it or whatever. It feels like they spent less money on it and the production values were not on par with some of these Netflix ones. But consequently, they were also a less restricted. It gets real weird in places in a way that was kind of, I would say in some ways, the objective like filmmaking quality was probably a little lower than your average Netflix. But I found it more entertaining because it felt just that much less cookie cutter.
Mm.
And I kind of liked that factor. But yeah, for the most part, whatever. But I mean, if you got Apple TV Plus, you could check it out. It won't hurt anything. And I like both of those actors. But yeah. We just started season two of Schmigadoon.
Oh.
And I did not understand how season two was going to go. And not only do I like it, it is sort of retroactively making the first season better. I don't want to spoil anything, but essentially there is an, like, the first season had a resolution and was done. And this one literally, in fact, it actually literally says 10 seconds later when you start the episode. There is an overarching plot of a sort that I'm like, I feel like they might have already had this plan. And it is creative. It is different while also similarly staying the same in some ways. And it is really doubling down on the best part about Schmigadoon, which is the meta awareness of musicals. Like, Schmigadoon is a musical, but it's also a thing in which people from our world are in a musical, and one of them at least is familiar with musicals and knows what is happening and why as related to that. So yeah, we've only seen one episode so far, but I'm into it, which I wasn't. I was tolerating the first season up until near the end. Like, Trish liked it and I didn't find it a problem. Some of the songs were cool. By the end, I was more into it, but yeah, so I'm liking that. We never went back and watched those last two episodes of Hello Tomorrow. We'll see if we do at some point, but we didn't do that. I'm not watching too much. I've watched a few movies recently, but nothing particularly to write home about. I thought maybe I had one that was worth mentioning, but no, I don't think so. Also, my wife has suddenly gotten into Pokemon Go.
Really? I didn't even know that was still a thing.
While she was away in Virginia with her sister cleaning up the beach house and everything for their injured mother, the sister is into Pokemon Go through somebody at her work. And so Trish was sort of helping because the sister was driving. And so when they'd stop somewhere, she'd have her phone so she could refill at the Pokestop and things. And by the end, Trish started doing it. And now she's way into it to the degree where, like, I have to drive real slow around the parking lot of the rec center across the way so that she can fight at the gym and stuff like this. So that's cute. I, at almost the exact same time frame, have started playing Marvel Snap. It's a free to play mobile game, although I'm actually just playing it on Steam. And it's just a real, real basic card battling game, basically. There are three locations, and you play against another person somewhere on the internet, and there are three locations, and you have superheroes and supervillains on your cards, and you get a certain amount of energy and you place them, and they all have different effects, and the locations have different effects, and at the very end, whoever controls the most of the three locations wins. And it's called Snap because it's the Thanos snap, even though it's not at all, but you're playing for these cosmic cubes, and at any point each of you has the ability one time to snap, which suddenly doubles how much you're playing for. And so if you're not doing well and the other person snaps and you're like, I don't think I'm going to win, you can retreat early and you won't lose as much. But people can get all in on that. Or sometimes it's really interesting. Sometimes if you snap, like, it intimidates the other person and they'll leave. Other times if you snap, they consider it just aggressive and they snap back. But it's fun. It's interesting enough that it doesn't feel boring, but it's simple enough that I can, like, watch TV while I'm doing it. But it's kind of fun. I don't know if I'll stick with it for a real long time, but I kind of like that. But yeah, there hasn't been a ton of stuff going on. Yeah, let's do an email then.
Okay.
I feel like there should be more. It's been 2 weeks. Usually we have way too much shit to talk about.
I did see Peter Pan and Wendy. That was terrible.
Was it? I mean,
yeah, awful.
Yeah. I mean, okay. I hate the story of Peter Pan for a variety of reasons. But if I try and be charitable and think about the positive versions and like the version of Peter Pan I would like to see. And actually, I do know a version of Peter Pan I would like to see. I had someone on a podcast one time pitch a story just for fun. And by the end of the story, it turned out it was basically a prequel to Peter Pan, but you didn't like see it coming the way it worked out. And I'm like, that is something I would watch because it was really cool. And did better with characterization and stuff, I think. But insofar as I can be step outside myself and be like, what would the good version of a Peter Pan movie look like? I don't think anybody's ever going to do it. Like the way I come to the decision that the next Peter Pan movie is probably going to be bad is when I hear that there's going to be another Peter Pan movie. I do not think we as a species are any longer, if we ever were, capable of making a good Peter Pan movie. But I'm still disappointed. There's still a little part of me that hopes, because there is something you can do. But it's like Pinocchio. I also don't think you can do a good Pinocchio. But to be fair, I think Pinocchio is super fucked up. I actually recently just got to watch the video all about the 2000 TV movie musical of Pinocchio called Geppetto, starring in the titular role Drew Carey. And starring as Stromboli, the villain, Brent Spiner. And starring as the Blue Fairy, who has a much larger role in this version, Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Weird as hell. It's not on Disney Plus. That is a shame, though. There are a few things that are showing up that we could watch digitally, and if we wanted to, they're like still in theaters, but it would cost like the new Renfield movie. Trish wants to see John Wick 4. I think there's something else that we could do, but it's not enough for us to bother with that. Oh, by the way, apropos of nothing, because I don't even remember how long it was ago, because remember I was doing a lot of weed for a while. David, if you're listening, yes, American Born Chinese was the trailer I was talking about that I had seen. Remember I said I saw a thing that looked a little bit like Shang-Chi mixed with Everything Everywhere All at Once, and it was a new Disney series that had nothing to do with Marvel? It's called American Born Chinese.
Oh.
So David had emailed when I talked about it before, and I said, and he says, is it this? And it was a link to that. So the other day I was going through my email, I'm like, wow, David did this a long time ago, and I never said anything. So yes, David, that is what it was. Good catch. All right. Make it with the email.
All right. Jazz.
Jazz. We call her All That Jazz.
The subject line is imperfect characters.
I wouldn't know anything about those.
So this is what she says. I got some feedback from students in my detective fiction course this semester about the inclusion of the novel Stormfront.
Oh.
Is that a Dresden Files?
Stormfront is the first Dresden Files novel. And Jazz has spoken before how she includes it in this class. I think the first time I talked about it, she mentioned it on the blog.
The students said they had a hard time with the novel because they didn't like the sexism of the main character. It's hard to tell, but they may also be pointing to the sexism of the author as well. I actually think the author is pretty critical of sexism in the character. Here's a line. Here's a line, though, that someone cited in their criticism of the book, quote, "I think that men ought to treat women like something other than just shorter, weaker men with breasts," unquote. The student said that this seemed outdated. It goes without saying, and it's uncomfortable to read. I know Will hasn't read the Dresden Files, but that line does give a sense of what the students don't like. I wonder what you think generally about dropping a book from a course based on reasons like this, and what you think about some of the particular objections here. Parenthetically, that one is more for Tony.
Oh, that's me. Oh, okay. I'm mostly on with your students on this one. Well, and I think I've been pretty big. I mean, the character of Harry Dresden, particularly in the early novels, is very male chauvinist, and he acknowledges that. I'm pretty sure the author acknowledges that. Like, that's, I don't think that's a controversial statement. Like, he was designed that. He was meant to be a sexist character. Not necessarily meant to glorify sexism or show it as a good thing, but that was meant to be a character flaw, essentially. I do think it is, I don't think it is that critical of it. And I do think there is a lot of sexism built into, I think the author is also sexist. What it largely comes down to is Harry Dresden, the character, and I believe Jim Butcher, the author, at least by the way this stuff gets portrayed in these books, is quite gender essentialist. And so, and that's a lot of what I care about. Unless you're doing open, obnoxious misogyny, in which case that sucks. But at this point, where I get annoyed in this day and age is stop presenting things as though there are certain things that have to be true or have to be not true because this person is a man or this person is a woman. And I feel like there's a lot of that in there. It's always a big deal when a woman in a Dresden Files book can do manly things. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. And I'm not saying that the author or the character is like, wow, that's weird. But they are like, no, don't sit on, like, nobody ever does that with the male characters. Nobody's like, oh, don't think he's weak. He can't. No, but with the women, it's always like, oh yeah. And the descriptions of female characters in the Dresden Files are male gazy as fuck. And this combined with, in my opinion, I mean, again, the, I think, uncontroversial homophobia of the main character, and I think subtextually huge homophobia of the author throughout the series, not the least of which is there are so many bisexual and lesbian women within the series, and there's not a single gay male character anywhere in it. There is a time where somebody pretends to be gay with all the mincing and stereotypes imaginable tied into it, so that's fun. But not a single gay male character. And in fact, there's a much later book bit where, for no particularly useful reason, a non-human character is attempting to determine what kind of person Harry Dresden is by asking his opinions about, basically, the anonymous gay male hookups happen in a particular park they're in. And they ask how he feels about it. And we spend a lot of time in a way that to me seems like we're really supposed to be impressed with him, where he's like, I actually think it's super gross and whatever, but as long as they're not hurting anybody, I don't care. It reminds me very much of the Macklemore song Same Love, and everybody thought it was really amazing. And if you listen to that song, the first verse of it spends a lot of time making sure everybody knows that Macklemore is definitely not gay and has never been gay, and then goes on to talk about how it's fine to be gay. But it's a very I don't know, I think he, it really felt like you wanted a pat on the back for being like, I don't object to men having sex. But to be fair, I haven't read him in a long time, and I don't know that I think they hold up well to critical analysis in general. I think Jim Butcher is a very good storyteller. I do not know that I would continue to say he's a very good author. I do enjoy his books. If he ever finishes the series, I will definitely read the remaining ones, I think. But I also haven't set foot in literary critique in forever. I very much would defer to Jazz's opinion on this. Let's talk about the criteria for pulling it from the syllabus, because I think we can do that abstractly, having nothing to do with this book. What are the circumstances by which one would do that, and what circumstances by which one should not do that, that kind of thing? What is your feeling on that?
I think of two things. One, there's a purpose that the book is in the syllabus, and if that purpose is still being served, then don't drop it. I mean,
that makes sense.
Just about any piece of art's is going to provoke many things, and some people might be provoked in a negative way, but that's, you know, there are lots of people these days who are pointing out that if you expect when you're going to go to college that you're not going to experience ideas you don't like or be provoked, maybe college isn't for you. So that's one part. If it's serving that purpose, then keep it. On the other hand, and this almost contradicts what I just said, if you think that the provocativeness of this thing is distracting from what you're trying to do, then by all means, switch it with something else. I mean, on one hand, I think we need to give college, I said that previously in a way that sort of criticized people who don't like being provoked. But another way of looking at it that gives the college student credit is college students can tolerate being provoked. I mean, they're not, you know, I think sometimes we think of college students to be way more fragile than they really are. But certainly if a thing is looking like it's more trouble than it's worth, it's just being disruptive completely to what you're trying to achieve, then you might as well just find something that else that you think will achieve that purpose. Yes. Without disrupting your class. But if it's still serving the purpose, even though it's making some people uncomfortable, and look, you know, if I were a professor, I wouldn't really want anyone to feel uncomfortable, but I would think I would also feel an obligation to sort of help them through that, talk them through that, you know, whatever that meant. But there would be a line past which I'd go, okay, this, there's no way I can mitigate this. There's no way I can, so I'm going to have to switch this out. So yeah, those two considerations, if it's serving the purpose, keep it. But if one of the ways it's not serving the purpose is because it really is like people just can't tolerate it, well, then you're just going to have to make an adjustment, I would think. That's my feeling.
Two things occurred to me while I was working hard not to listen to you. No, I agree. I mean, disruptive is the whole thing, regardless of the circumstance. If something on the syllabus is disruptive to the class, it's probably not a good idea to have it. But two things occur to me here. One is my own college experience, and particularly literary critique. There were some materials we hated. We thought were absolute shit, and in some cases, absolute offensive and things like that. We just argued and discussed it in class and wrote about it in our papers. I don't recall anyone ever suggesting this shouldn't even be in this class. Yeah,
me neither.
We were like, no, it's in this class so we can shit all over it. And actually, in a lot of cases after the argument, we were like, oh, we didn't think about it. Because this also mostly came up in earlier classes where some of us, including me, were sort of just being introduced to literary critique.
Right.
And so I think I've talked before, there was a lot of things where people are like, I think you're reading too much into this. And then by like the end of the semester, we're all like, and did you notice how the landscape is shaped in this and what that signifies? And, so, but yeah, I don't recall that ever being a thing. But the other one, that hit me real hard upside the head, this is a course on detective fiction. This cannot be the only instance in which people are discussing slash bothered by sexism.
Yeah, I mean, would be surprising, wouldn't it?
I do not believe the statement I am about to say. However, if someone else came to me and said, I think sexism is an integral part of detective fiction, I would not be shocked by that viewpoint. I don't feel it is integral, but like just from like data sampling, I'd be like, I can see how you would get there. So what's up with that? Like, this can't be the only place that comes up, unless again, defer to Jazz on this. Maybe the rest of the syllabus is curated in such a way that it's not a thing, but
I don't know. I mean, when I've talked to Jazz about these topics before, because I've always been interested in her work and stuff, often they're very interesting gender issues in what she's presenting. I mean, like, you know, not just sexism or misogyny, as interesting as those things might be by themselves, but things like, how is femininity in general regarded? What are we saying about, the prevalence of female victims, and, what are we saying about the female body and what that represents? You know, these are very interesting things. And I think they say not just some interesting things about the works and the time in which they were written, which that's interesting enough. I mean, that by itself is fascinating, but it circles back and it says a lot about the person who's reading it. It says some things about our times today. And, I'm sure a lot of people who just go to, because I had the same experience you had when I was first introduced to critical theories of various kinds. I'd never done that before. I'd never considered that before. And it took some time to really get used to, I get why this is valuable. And there's probably, these kids aren't used to this kind of thinking and whatever, and there's probably some great insights they can gain into insights about themselves, insights about the society they're living in, insights about how to read literature in a different way, right? I mean, because just because they don't like this book or they think it's outdated or whatever, they're still learning how to think about reading and how to think about what they're reading. And that's important. So there's just so many levels here that are valuable. And, I've always, when Jazz has shared the lessons that she's using and the material she's using and the syllabus, and sometimes she's even allowed me to watch some of the taped lectures or whatever, and it's always fascinating, endlessly fascinating. And it's not the fact that maybe something in a story is personally offensive would seem to me, if I were a student, what seems like such a small part of a bigger thing that's so interesting. And like you, I remember people being offended by stuff we were reading, but I can't recall one time anyone ever saying this shouldn't be in the curriculum.
I mean, I have been very vocal, even back, my view on the Dresden Files books has changed over the years. It's worth noting this book is also a lot older now, so there's a dating issue here. But I have always been very open about the fact that the worst character in the Dresden Files series is Harry Dresden, in my opinion. That being said, I do think an analysis of his views on gender and his views on a lot of things, his relationships throughout the books and their evolution and his perspective evolution. And to the author's credit, in later books, he does show growth. And there are sections in later books where he's like, this is how I used to think, and now I realize this, and it matches up. I think that stuff is fascinating. So yeah, I would never recommend getting rid of this. But I did also realize there's an implication here in this email that this hasn't happened. She's used this book for a while in her class. That there's an implication this hasn't come up in previous years, or at least not to the degree. So that I find very interesting. What has changed? And the only thing I think of off the top of my head is, again, it is very dated. And at one point, when a new Dresden Files book came out, I decided I was going to go back and reread them all. And it was shocking.
That fairy showed up and messed them up for you. Which fairy?
Yeah, the suck fairy. Yeah, no. It was the suck fairy. It wasn't the sexism fairy or anything like that, or the message fairy. It was mostly just I didn't realize how much better of a writer he became as time went on, because it was very gradual. But when I went back to the beginning, I'm like, wow. By comparison, these books do kind of suck. And some of it was the sexism, which I like to think that the author learned and grew as a person as well during the time, which I think is unavoidable. And you get this with any genre series. They tend to get better as they go on because they tend to establish character and establish relationships in ways that the reader can then understand and predict. We watched a fucking episode of The Great North the other day, which I will remind you is a comedic animated show on Fox on Sundays, and it's like the third season. And I was very conflicted about the episode we watched, because on the one hand, it was very funny. But on the other hand, a lot of characters did things that felt very out of character for me, and I was bothered by that. Even though they were done, it's not a serious show. It's a comedic, it's like The Simpsons or anything. It's a goof show. But I was like, that character wouldn't have that response. Like, this felt weird. And I felt weirdly sort of betrayed by that fact. for all that I was like, but it was a really funny episode. I mean, I don't know. I think that's as much use as we can give here, because this cracks open the whole thing of how do you teach a course on detective fiction? How do you pick a syllabus for any literary course? What are you trying to elicit? Why, Jazz, why did you pick it in the first place? I would agree, in a very general sense, it is a pretty good exemplar of detective fiction, and in particular is a good one because it is fantasy detective fiction, which is a much less common genre, although it has grown over the years. So yeah, I don't know. This is a kind of email where I'm like, this is a good email, but really I wish instead we just had Jazz on here to talk about it. But yeah, I mean, I, insofar as I understand what you're saying, I agree with your student's reaction. I don't agree with your student's request, such as it is, or if it wasn't a specific request, I do not think what you have listed is a reason why you should remove it, but I fully admit I don't know any of this stuff.
I really don't know.
I feel like this dovetails a little bit. A movie I wasn't going to talk about because it's not that good and I don't recommend it or anything, but I watched a movie the other night from 1969, 68 called The Unnaturals. And it was, I looked it up later, it was an Italian West German co-production. I always love the 70s. If you find a movie in the 70s that two different European countries work together on, they are always batshit crazy. And I love them. Actually, that goes for in the 80s too. If you can get two different European countries to decide they're going to make this movie together, they're always nuts. But this one was basically a soap opera filtered through a weird filtered through the old thing of it's a stormy night and the car breaks down and we have to go to this house and there are people who live there and one of them knows supernatural stuff and we have a seance and then we learn, like, but and in fact it kept flashing back and forth between earlier things and stuff like this. And like I said, it's called The Unnaturals was the title. And I still don't know exactly what that's referring to. I was worried because there is a lot of there lesbianism features prominently in it, not as a plot point per se, but it is a thing. And the way some of the characters were portrayed, and I mean, this is a whole classic. Homosexuals have always been were always portrayed horribly in older movies. But in this, I was worried that they were doing like, oh, is that what they mean by unnatural? I hope not. But I don't think it was. But I have so many, like, I, for all that this movie wasn't great, I was entertained, but it's not a good movie. There's so many layers that I'm like, what were they? There are so many things that I'm like, what did you mean by doing it that way? Because it's, yeah, it basically turns out that the people in the old house are maybe already dead, I think. They might be ghosts. And everybody gets killed for their transgressions. But the transgression's very wild. Everybody, I think, involved is guilty of having an affair. But, like, they all are cheating on each other, and they all kind of know it. So I'm like, is that really a crime? And some of, and everybody dies for these things. Meanwhile, some of them murdered people in cold blood and framed other people for it, or convinced other people they did it in some cases, or some people assaulted people, sexual and other, like, and other people killed someone in straight up self-defense. I'm like, these don't all seem, and again, the lesbianism thing ties in because some of the women seem to be bisexual and some of them are in marriages to men that are clearly just shams, and some, and we get some women who try and blackmail other women into lesbianism, which is just a dumb thing they used to do in old movies and do in current movies too. But I found myself going like, what? It's very thought-provoking, just in a sort of what were they thinking kind of way, but not like, I don't mean that obnoxiously. I'm like, genuinely, what were they thinking? I'm curious because I know what I'm thinking, but it's, I get this with a certain brand of Italian cinema. And I think it might be the problem where, like, there's dubbing. And so the performances feel different. Like I've talked about before, I watched a movie and there was a actress in it who is Chinese and speaks a very heavily accented English, and I thought she was a terrible actor, and then later there was a flashback where she's somewhere else and she speaks in Chinese, and somehow that made her seem like a better actor. And I don't think she was, but like, some, I think because I can't understand the words except for subtitles, like somehow it sounds less affected or whatever. And so I don't know if that was a component here because it was in Italian and it wasn't actually subtitled. The captions gave me the subtitles, which is weird. I don't see that very often when it's like this was on Tubi. It wasn't like I had language choices. It was just what it is. And I'm like, so if I hadn't had the captions on, would it just be in Italian and they'd be like, fuck you, what they're saying? Like, is that a thing? I don't know. I don't know. But a lot of European movies, and especially Italian ones out of this era, feel like they're really trying to tell me something, even when it's like the schlockiest, sleaziest exploitation thing. I feel like they're really trying to send a message, and I'm always like, what is that message though? I don't. And is it really a message, or am I just like, oh, it's in a different language, it must be, like, I don't know. But I in this day and age, I struggle a lot with the whole death of the author or not death of the author thing in art. The idea that there are two schools of thought. One is that the art is what the artist intended, and this comes up a lot in like movies and things, is you care about the filmmaker's intent. And then there's other ones that are like, it doesn't matter. Once it's made, the maker doesn't matter anymore. I get what I get out of it. Classic example is years ago, a young man in a court case actually made a big argument that once films are made and once art is made, it is out of the hands of the artist. And now it is out in the world, and the artist has no more control over it or what people think of it. And there is no right interpretation. Everybody gets to interpret it the way they are, and it just is. The person who made this speech, and you can find it online, I think, it was a very moving speech, in my opinion, was George Lucas. Way before any special editions or anything like that. And yeah, and then the flip side is the auteur kind of thing, where it's like, this is their vision, and it's not about how what you get from it, it's about understanding their vision. It's about you hearing their message.
I mean, I'm interested in both of those things. I mean, certainly
I'm interested in them conceptually.
Yeah.
But it's hard, and of course, then you get things like one of the great examples is the whole Dumbledore is gay thing in Harry Potter. Because that caused all this stir and everything. And some people were like, oh, that's really cool. And other people were like, oh, that really sucks. And then a lot of people were like, there's nothing about it in the book. So just because the author later said, oh, yeah, that's true, doesn't change what's in the book. Uh-oh. And it's Ridley Scott and Blade Runner is a great example of this. There are like 18 different cuts of Blade Runner. And there is a constant discussion as to whether or not the main character is a human or a replicant. And there are entire swaths of the internet dedicated to arguing this point. And it is a fascinating debate. It is fun to analyze and be like, oh, does this suggest this? It ceases to be fun when people are like, there's a right answer.
Mm.
And the problem is Ridley Scott, years ago, not only edited new versions to better get what he wanted across, but has come out and said his opinion on that. Just, he said, no, it's this way. And some people were like, yes, I'm right. And other people were like, wow, so now that movie's kind of ruined for me. While again, other more sensible people were like, well, he can say that, but the movie's the movie. And I'm gonna interpret it how I want.
Right.
I am mostly death of the author these days, I think, just because there are too many works of art in the world that I really love done by people who I really don't like.
Mm.
And I find that uncomfortable. And the best way I have found to deal with that is to sort of separate them.
Mm.
And also, in a lot of cases, it keeps me from having too much judgment about the artist, because there are a lot of artists out there that I don't like because of like two things they said in the news once. That doesn't give me a sense of what kind of people they are any more than consuming their art does.
Yeah.
Like, we all want to believe that our favorite actors are really cool people. But A, we don't know. And B, if you do see things of them theoretically not acting, then you're like, oh yeah, they seem like a really good person there or whatever. And I'm like, yeah, but we don't really know. The same could be true for us. The same is true for us with regard to Maggie. Because Maggie, our listener.
Oh.
Maggie's the only listener who doesn't know either of us in real life. So she's the only one who theoretically her entire sense of the people we are is from this podcast.
Mm.
And so Maggie, you do not have an accurate portrayal of what kind of people we are. Because this is our podcast. It's not us. This is not our art.
Watch 12 years worth.
No. I think that could even pull you further away from it. But, I mean, then that's the thing in general. I have that with all sorts of parasocial things. Trish was gone in Virginia, and I was alone. And I had very little to do, and I had very few people to see. So I got real, real parasocial again. I did this actually when I was in Oregon when my dad died, and I was just hanging out in the apartment watching a lot of live streams of people I know from, like, back then it was College Humor folks, but this time it was a British video game critique channel called Outside Xbox, and they have a second channel called Outside Extra. And I just watched a lot of their, like, playing Jackbox games or other live streams like that, and it was very much like I'm just hanging out with my friends here. And I'm aware that that's false or whatever, but it also filled the hole I needed at the time to not feel lonely. And in general, yeah, when it comes to my art, I don't like that, but there are also times where I'm like, I mean, I'm the guy who will finish a movie, and if I'm confused about what exactly happened, I immediately go to Wikipedia, even if I think the movie was deliberately being obtuse, because sometimes Wikipedia, like, caught details or whatever that they're like, it implies this. So I'm already full of shit. But in general, I think we would all be better off if we would sort of treat the art as a self-contained thing. And discount anything we might know about the person who made it or the people who made it or their particular intentions. But easier said than done. If you'd like us to be as incredibly insightful and helpful with your emails, please write in themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. And if you'd like to see more stuff from us, go to aethertheater.com or go to smashwords.com. And if you go there, go look up Anthony K. Parsons or the word Oddwings, Oddwings. Read my book. At Aether Theater, you can see my movie and also some things William did. I don't remember what those are. Also participate in this conversation. Go to the blog, themagicaltalkinghat.com, or just comment on YouTube if you're watching this on YouTube. Tell us your thoughts on this. I in particular gave a lot of opinions today. Do you agree that I gave a lot of opinions? No. That's the blog just full of no, you didn't. I'll leave you all with this bit of wisdom that I recently acquired to spare some of you the difficulty of having to do it. If you eat nacho cheese Doritos and then shortly after that eat Lemonheads candy, you will find that your burps taste like Fruit Loops. I think it's the corn, because the Fruit Loops would be made of corn, and then the citric acid, but I don't know.
Sure,
but
yeah.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? then please write the hat at themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. That's themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.